Hi, I'm Will Arnett from Spotless. I'm 31 years of age.
I'm Jason.
Hear me out. You know, when you were on the show, were the nerves...
Get to the question. Come on.
Were you happy or were
Shut
you sad?
Up. Because you're talking over him,
Jason. Hey, guys, come on. Let's not fight. I'm Sean. I didn't know where I...
I don't
crazy.
Understand where you guys are coming for.
Hi, I'm Dana Carvey, and I'm on Smartless.
Smart.
Sean, what was your meal last night?
My meal last night was I had chicken salad sandwich and mac and cheese. Box mac and cheese.
You end up at an 11-year-old's birthday party? What happened?
Did the camp counselor just bring that over to you, or was it set up at a...
No, but you know, Scotty and I, we actually watched the Chargers-Buffalo Bills game. And whenever the Buffalo Bills play, whenever they come on the screen, one of us will always go, Buffalo Bill. I'll help you try to catch him, Clarice.
Oh, man, that sounds like a fun house. What a fun
house.
You guys
have a lot of fun.
Hello, Belle.
Does the Wonder Truck, the Wonder Bread, they just come to your house, they just fuck the supermarket, they go straight to the house and just...
They slow down, they throw the back open.
They don't even stop.
No, they don't even stop.
It's like the ice cream truck.
But what is it? So the chicken salad sandwich, did you make the chicken salad?
It was made. It was pre-made.
Okay.
From where?
When you say it was made by what, the heavens?
No, I bought it pre-made.
Oh, I see.
Like a tub of it.
Yeah.
I didn't know that CVS made chicken salad.
Did you spoon it out on your Wonder Bread? CVS chicken salad.
CVS is like a pharmacy. Yeah.
Oh, you think people don't know what CVS is?
The mac and cheese. Did that also...
That came from a box. And... But I also had, what else did I have? I had brownies.
When was the last time you put something in your face that didn't have preservatives in it? And let's keep it clean.
I don't know. Oh, I had a salad. I had a little tiny Caesar salad with breadcrumbs in it.
Oh, fucking stop the presses. I mean.
CVS has a salad row now? Whose guest is it today?
It's my guest. You know what? Let's get to our guest because our guest is way too funny to not be heard from at this point. Our guest, we often run into this problem. We start listing off their credits, and then it's like it's too quick.
I love how Will always freestyles these intros, you know?
Well, because, you know, I just try to keep it organic, man. Uh-huh. I just want to be as freestyle and organic as this person is.
You have bullet points
very
there
funny.
That you'd like to hit?
I do.
Okay.
You might remember him from his role in Halloween 2.
Sure.
You might remember him from the film Tough Guys.
Is this Jack O'Lantern?
Do you remember Tough Guys?
Jesus.
Tough Guys.
Hello, Kirk Douglas.
No.
Do you remember back in the 80s? Yeah, it was a big film. This guy, Sean, in that film, he then went on to, he's not religious, but he's been known to maybe keep track of people going when and where they go to church.
He's trying to underplay this.
He was never elected to office, but you might remember as George Bush. He's got a hilarious podcast with our hilarious friend David Spade now.
I love
Dana
Carvey.
He's one of the funniest dudes of all time. I've never met him before. He's Mr. Dana Carvey.
I love Dana
Carvey. I'm so honored he's here, Dana Carvey.
Whoa.
Let's see.
Welcome.
He's going to reveal himself.
Oh, my God.
There he is.
Wait, anyway, how you doing, boys?
Wait, you're in Bennett's house.
Because I demanded it.
Did you guys do a house swap today?
Yeah, we did a house swap. I demanded to be upstairs.
This is the first time we've ever done this. Dana's joining us from Bennett's place, which is amazing.
This is crazy.
Oh, you got an incoming.
I don't understand. Are you guys having a sleepover?
We had a slumber party last night.
I've never seen Jason this perplexed, even in Ozarks.
I have. Dana, just put a book in front of him and you'll see the same look. Hey, Dana.
Anyway, here they are. They're the Smartless guys. They just woke up. They're a little bit sleepy. Can you believe it? Sean Hayes, Mr. Fudd, you know, you got the voice over there, Will Arnett, and of course, Jason Bateman, and the brains of the operation, I understand.
That's right. You can tell by the glasses.
I like that it's almost a Regis. That almost sounded like Reege, old school Regis.
It was Regis.
You know, one time I remember you said something about when you used to do Regis years ago, and you said, I remember this, I don't know why it's stuck. You said, he's so uncool, he's cool. Do you remember saying that?
Totally.
Like, 30 years ago, and it always stuck with me. I always thought that was such a funny comment, and true.
Well, it's Carson at it, too. It's earnestness.
Yeah.
You know?
That's mm-hmm.
God, I Regis, my God. I remember when he was on AMLA out here in Los Angeles. This was late 70s, early 80s.
Mm. I used to think it was the thing. So he was the father-in-law of a good friend of ours, Mike Schur.
Mike Schur.
So I went over one time, Mike and his wife, JJ, were in New York. So they were staying with the Philbins, and we went over to the apartment.
Philbins.
And we went in, and it was like, for coffee. And Regis came in, and he said, "Can I get you a coffee, Will?" And I was like, wow, this is real.
He's this old-fashioned show business. He was so positive. So I do it. I get to visit him. We actually interviewed William Shatner, and I signed him off as Regis, just spontaneously. And he laughed so hard.
Who doesn't like Bill Shatner? He's done it all. He's been everywhere.
But now I do creep into Trump because that's how I started Trump with Regis. Robert Smigel and I talked about that.
It's really Regis. Trump and Regis have a little bit of an overlap, but then you add in this part. We're going a lot of places. We're doing a lot of things. And they go back and forth, and Regis is here, and Trump is there, but they're definitely overlapped. So it's just New York stuff, you know.
That's hysterical.
I want to entertain you guys. I've been listening to your podcast. You need to be entertained. Oh, you guys work hard.
You are the person to do it.
Wind me up.
I love you. You used to do, I mentioned George Bush, so the first George Bush you kind of deposited a virus into the vernacular of not going to do it, which has become a thing that like sometimes I'll almost like theoretically I can't stop saying it.
Well, I don't know if that's what you guys have, all your kind of inside jokes and catchphrases. And I love Sean's Hannibal Lecter, was it?
Yeah.
What do you have to ask? Yeah, it's terrible.
I did a movie with Anthony Hopkins once, and we would entertain the crew because he's like Sammy Davis Jr. He was an impressionist who became the world's greatest actor.
Wow.
And so he would do different, you know, he'd do James Cagney and I do Jimmy Stewart. And then eventually to entertain the crew, he would do Hannibal Lecter and I would do Garth. Come here, I can smell Wayne on you, Garth. You know, that kind of thing. Get away, big scary man. But as far as extenuating rhythms, I mean, everyone does it. That's what I would do in high school. You know, so George Bush Sr. on the cue card, it would say N-O-T, not going to do it.
Yeah.
Like 4 years before.
Yeah.
Not going to do it. By year four, it was like, not, N-A, ga, G-A, da, it. Not gonna dat. And they went with it. I was as shocked as you guys.
I used to do an impression it was you doing George W. Bush, but it was, Jimmy, what's his name? Old, you know, not gonna do it. You know,
Jimmy Stewart.
Jimmy Stewart doing an impression of you doing George Bush.
That's
with
all right.
My friend Giles, I used to do it all the time. I go, not gonna do it. I don't know why. And I used to call it, this is Jimmy Stewart doing Dana doing things.
I smuggled a cassette tape recorder in the mid-70s into the Circle Star Theater near San Francisco so I could tape Rich Little's act because there was no YouTube.
Sure.
And from taping that and listening, I just took his Jimmy Stewart. And it's somebody that you just sort of want to sneak up on. And the thing I like about Jimmy Stewart is then I get mad. I like the angry Jimmy Stewart. Well, you know what you were doing, didn't you? Well, you know, I'm not going to play this game anymore. And so that became the reason I'm a comedian, because I sucked so bad. But Jimmy Stewart as a waiter never failed in a biker bar. Never
failed.
It
occurs to me that Jimmy Stewart kind of sounds like Mason Adams, the guy who used to do Smuckers. When you get Smuckers.
Oh, my God. That's right.
You get so much Smuckers.
That's right.
Are you a secret impressionist?
No, I'm not at all.
I'm not at all, but that's just a fun voice to do.
No, but
I don't even know who it is, but I'm your guest today. Hi. Hey.
It's almost Owen Wilson, isn't it?
You're right.
You know, we could go to Argentina and go surfing if you want. You know, that'd be fun.
I told Owen I would never do his impression on TV, but I'm on a podcast.
You're not on TV.
Sorry, right. Sean, you're next. What did you say?
I was just going to say,
for Sean.
As I say, where's Jason Sean and Hayes Will or actually do like really great accents, and like I can't do as good of accents as those, because so I bet you guys do impressions. I've just never heard.
Well, I don't know. I do some accents good. How are you with, what's your favorite, easiest accent to do?
Me?
Any of you guys?
Jason whips out a British one like nobody can do it. And also
God, there's so many flavors of British ones. I do love them.
Yeah, cuz you want to be like you can go like I found myself talking, I'm not joking, this morning going cuz I was watching Tottenham Arsenal in the North London Derby and I was going, not today, my son. Not today. And I'm like, there's nobody here but my dog. The kids are up at their mom's house. I was like, what am I doing?
We've been watching Gary Oldman, meaning me and my wife. On slow horses.
Oh, yeah,
and then
too.
By the end of it, I'm like, you're a bunch of lazy losers, and you don't know what the fuck you're doing. It's kind of it's a light version of Michael Caine.
Yeah.
But I want to say before, which is, if you want to do him, you go down to stairs. You start bloody up here, and then you walk it right down to station.
Oh, God. Would Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon do that in the, what was the name of the film that they do where they go to all the restaurants?
Guys, the Trip. The Trip.
And they're sitting at the
table. I learned that impression. I rarely try and actively go, I got to do that guy. It was from Steve Coogan's impression. And I actually practiced it. And then I did a prank phone call to J.J. Abrams.
Oh, yeah?
Really?
This is Michael Caine here. I heard you're making one of those spaceship shows, and I'd like to put my hat in the ring. I know I'm a bit long in the tooth, but maybe this old dinosaur's got one lap left around.
What's that process like? When you want to take on a new impression, you want to see how close you are to something that you would like. Where are you? Are you in the bathroom in front of a mirror, or are you just in the car because you just need to hear it? You don't need to see it?
If I'm alone at home or in a car, or many times I'll be practicing when I'm hiking.
Oh, really?
Sure.
And I'm like, I don't know what you're bloody saying. And then I see a hiker and I have to go, yes, honey, I'll be home in a minute. You know, I have to actually cover for my voices.
I like the idea that there's somebody in West LA who went for a hike and they didn't see anybody. They're like, I think I heard Michael Caine on the hike today.
Or the church lady. I want to say, connect 6 degrees of separation. So I was on vacation. They told me to send an email to Paul McCartney in case he would go on. And I ended up interviewing Paul McCartney from the Four Seasons in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, because I was there with my family. Mm-hmm. And I listened to you guys talking to Paul because I was looking, where is he on a podcast? So I listened to your podcast to try to get a sense of how to navigate that because it's Paul McCartney. Yeah.
And what you found was there couldn't be a nicer, more approachable fella. Right? I mean, like,
I was
so blown away by how kind he was.
Here is, like, you guys have to be Beatle fans in your age group, right? Well, Sean, to the podcast. So I didn't think he wanted to talk about the Beatles, especially.
Right.
You know? Yeah. But then after a while of going around and around, I just brought up Get Back, the documentary.
Right. Mm.
Then he lit up. And then for all of us, the last forensic part of the Beatles is who did what? Because you know it's kind of like No Reply is John Lennon's song, but did Paul write the middle eight, you know? So at one point I took a chance. I said, did John ever thank you for your bass lines?
Right.
And that lit him up, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I was the bass player. You know, normally the bass player is like the fat guy. He's the fat guy. You know, and I was the plunk in the plunk in the plunk in the plunk. And I go,
you got a lot better with She's So Heavy and Dear Prudence. Well, I just got up the keyboard. There's never been a more humble genius in his vernacular ever. We sat for a plunk, me and John, eyeball to eyeball. And we're just plunking. We're plonking. Next thing you know, we had the White Album.
Did you do him to him at all, too, or no?
I did a little bit, but I was so intimidated.
Oh so. You know, you just remind me, I think that the accent that you were asking before, and not to go back, but it just thinking of doing
accents.
Him to him, which is, I used to always go Jackie Stewart, and I used to always, to get into it, I'd say, it's an absolutely brutal day for Motir Carey. Right?
That's great.
So you do need a line to get into it,
so,
right?
So this past fall, these guys know I've been doing a lot of stuff with Formula One, and I'm in Singapore at the Formula One race. And I see, and this guy goes, do you want to meet Jackie Stewart? I go, yeah. And we go up and I meet him and he's walking and he looks fantastic. And I go, you know, you're saying, my name is Jackie Stewart. It's a brutal day. I go, that's how I would get into doing my Scottish accent. And he goes, oh, is that right? That was it.
And he kept walking.
He just took care of. He's like, why are you stopping me?
Yeah. I'm Scottish, but that one kind of, I tilt away from that a lot. I can do Irish pretty good, but probably too grandiose. I got a lot of Irish relatives. But
wait, what's the difference between Scottish and Irish if you were to say—
Oh, my God.
Our podcast
is going to get shut down.
A tough day for racing. No, I'm just— well, what would be the sound difference between Scottish and Irish? Tough day for racing.
An Irishman might say, well, it's a tough day for racing.
Yeah. It's a little more lilty and not as hard on the—
Paul has a lot of Irish relatives because of the lilting Liverpool accent, which always sounds like you're asking a question. Did you go to the store?
Like Canadians.
I did go to the store. Well, did you go?
So many Irish moved across to Liverpool, Paul, yes. And if you'll— even Manchester, if you look at the Gallagher brothers from Oasis. Mm-hmm. And then north of that is a town called Blackpool, which is a good, interesting point.
Just north.
Yeah. It's a seaside town and resort town, Blackpool.
Next to the water, huh? Great.
Dublin in Irish means Blackpool. It's the same thing.
Huh.
How about that? And a lot of Irish people.
Yeah, we can trim all this
now. You guys might want to read some. You don't need to read shit because you've got me as a friend.
Thanks for that, Will.
I love the Irish. My wife's Irish relatives, her mother's from Dublin. She's 91. And the relatives came over. And they're so humble, as you know. There's just like, you go to a grocery store and it's like bread, egg. There's like three items. I took them to a supermarket for the first time, my wife's aunt and uncle, and they go, look at all the yogurt. It was just like, they thought it was— they go, why do you need so many cereals? I didn't have any response to that. It's free market capitalism. I have no idea why we need 900 types of cereals.
Wait, so Dana, walk me through. So you do all this. You mentioned that you go in and you recorded Rich Little. What was the thing? How did you go and make— I always like to understand when people go and make the jump from being a super fan or somebody who's interested, who has the talent for it or listening to it, to actually getting paid for what they do. What was that jump for you? Was it doing impressions, or was it doing stand-up, or was it a combo?
Both. I didn't lean on the impressions. I did them, but I did a lot of other stuff too. But I was so— it really seemed like trying to be Neil Armstrong for someone from my household, five kids, dad was a high school teacher, 1,500 square feet, one bathroom, that I would be on television. And so that upended me a little bit. I did a lot of things. I was probably a waste of time. But Hollywood started hiring me just as a cute, nice guy. You know, that's what I did.
You had roles in movies and you were doing stuff before
they
you
got
SNL.
They didn't care for me to be funny. Right. I was doing stand-up in the side, but they offered me One of the Boys with Mickey Rooney.
Yes.
And so I did it. It was $7,500 a week. It was like
jackpot.
Pennies from heaven.
Wait, was it Meg Ryan in that? Was it Meg Ryan in
Megan
that?
Meg Ryan was in six episodes, played my girlfriend, I believe, Scatman. And, of course—
was it Megan back then?
You caught that. Okay.
No, but was it?
It was Megan. Well, Megsy by the end. It's kind of like Anthony Hopkins. It was Anthony, Tony, and then it was Hoppy by the time we ended.
You go Meg Rooney, goes Megan. You go Mickey Rooney. He's like Michael Rooney. Yeah, sure. They were all in it.
Mickey's macaroni. Mickey's everything. Mickey was the craziest person Mickey I ever Rooney. Met and had a 35 revolver in his jacket.
Wait, what?
At a 38.
Wait, what?
And he would wave it around.
What?
They're not going to get me. Yes. He had a loaded gun. He goes, this script is caca. And then he would throw it across. No, he was like— you've heard stories about Mickey Rooney, haven't you?
No.
I mean, not really.
You're outing
not
him right
really?
Now.
Yeah,
no,
here we go. I'm young. I'm really
young. You know who he was, right?
Yeah, of course.
So if he said this once, he said it 1,000 times, literally every day. I was just like this. We did it on SNL, and I was writing it with Bonnie and Terry Turner, and I just said what Mickey said, and that incredible laugh. So I didn't write it. I said, I was the number one star in the world. You hear me? Bang. The world. And that's exactly the way he said it 1,000 times. Number one star in the world. Bang. You hear me? The world.
What is that sound supposed to be?
What's he doing?
I don't know. But he was he had a gun, Scatman was stoned. He thought I was gay.
Sure.
And I was there with Nathan Lane. So we had to do a Three's Company thing.
Oh, well, there you go.
Where what he had his arm cast. Around Nathan. He looked at me and said, I'm just glad we like girls.
what? Oh, so he's...
Wait, great. What a fucking cast. So it was you, Nathan Lane, Meg Ryan, and Mickey Rooney?
And Scatman Carruthers.
And Scatman Carruthers.
Who just was stoned. What? The nicest guy I've ever met. But he was just high all day. And my brother came to visit me, and he gave us some pot, and it was terrible. So the next trip, I brought him a lid of Santa Cruz Colombian pot.
Sure.
Can you believe it? This is like 1981.
Classic blend.
Next morning in the elevator, he says, "The music was good. Might I get a pound?" So, and after the show was...
Yeah. Didn't want to mess around with an ounce.
No, and it was called music. It was a little bit illicit.
Sure.
And he
straight
had a bottle,
a pound.
A clear bottle full of vitamins, and he would walk back and forth across the sound stage, chugging them, going, "I'm going to 100. I'm going to 100. And he would chug the vitamins. But after the show, my brother and I got him a whole bag. We didn't smoke much weed after this. But anyway, a bag of Santa Cruz pot, giant, and brought it to Van Nuys, brought it to his house, and he played the ukulele for us for hours.
Uh-huh. No way.
What's this project called? I got to see this.
One of the Boys.
You can look it up online.
One of the Boys. The craziest. I wore a sweater. I was the straight man.
Literally.
Mickey. We would do impressions together, too. He was an impressionist. But he did have a .38 revolver, and he said, "Before I got this big break, I was going to go to Sacramento to the prison there. There's a serial killer, Juan Corona. I was going to come in as a visitor. I was going to bring my .38, and I was going to say, 'You know who I am? I'm Mickey Rooney,' and I was going to plug him full of holes." These are verbatim quotes. That's John Mulaney's favorite thing I've ever told him. These are verbatim quotes from Mickey Rooney. And he's one of those old guys who would talk till he ran out of breath. "Incidentally, Judy Garland never..." And everything was a non sequitur. "Judy Garland never owned a car. They pumped her so full of drugs, it killed her. How long has Robert Redford been in the business?" 10 years? "I've been in the business..." It's like 3 weeks before his birth. "I've been in the business 61 years. He's the greatest character I've ever met. By far.
Really, really holding on to his past. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He was like, "I called up Warner Brothers in 1955. I said, 'This is Mickey Rooney. I need a job.' They hung up on me." And then he would wander off. And he had a new show, a new thing every day.
Wait, that is so...
Yeah.
And we will be right back.
Thank you to Organic Valley for supporting the show. I'm just finishing up a little cottage cheese here. See, the thing is, I'm always on the hunt to find the best dairy products. But so many options out there. Which one do you choose? With Organic Valley, you can feel good choosing their dairy products. Their products are ethically sourced from small family farms where cows spend lots of time grazing outside on organic pasture. Organic Valley dairy doesn't come from those big factory farms. Their farmer families are real people who care about people, animals, and nature. They just taste better. You can taste the organic. For me, look, I'm a coffee guy, okay? Guilty as charged. Every morning, I do the same thing, which is I come downstairs, I make my coffee, and the thing that this so important ingredient is my half and half. And I just happen to choose Organic Valley half and half even before they started supporting the show. I mean, talk about a match made in dairy heaven. And I also happen to enjoy their eggs and their butter and their other products too. So I was going to say, so sue me, but so don't sue me. When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you enjoy a great-tasting organic dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals they call it home. And do not ask me to convert that to hectares. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop.
Hey, Smartless listener, we get support from Viator.
You know, Scotty and I took a vacation many years ago. We geeked out because we liked the movie Amadeus, and we went to Austria, and it was fantastic. We went to all Mozart's kind of hangout places, and I know, total nerdville, but it was pretty cool, and I absolutely loved it. It will always be one of our favorite memories of vacationing, so maybe one of the most perfect experiences we've ever had traveling. And so next time you're looking to plan the perfect trip like that, an experience, check out Viator. Viator is a tool you can use to plan and book travel experiences around the world. Their app and website make it easy to explore 300,000 plus travel experiences so you can discover what's out there no matter where you are traveling or what you are interested in. Feel better about your travel decisions by checking out real traveler reviews to get the inside scoop from others who have already checked out the experiences. Viator offers 24/7 customer service so you know you'll get support at any hour if things aren't going as planned. Plus, free cancellation to help you plan for the unexpected. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find the perfect travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challenger, starring Zendaya, Josh O'Connor, and Mike Feist. Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy turned coach who has taken her husband Art and transformed him into a world-famous Grand Slam champion. To jolt him out of his recent losing streak, she makes him play a challenger event close to the lowest level of the pro tournament. Her strategy takes a turn when he finds himself standing across the net from his former best friend and Tashi's former boyfriend, Patrick. Past and present collide and tensions run high. Tashi must ask herself, what will it cost to win? See Challengers only in theaters April 26th. Get tickets now at ChallengersMovie.com.
And now, back to the show.
Wait, Dana.
Yes.
When I was in high school, you know, Mike Myers was on our show, and I said the same thing to him. And I said, when I was in high school, you know, you were God to me and God to everybody who was into comedy and sketch and just everything. Like, and we would go, I remember going to school on a Monday, and everybody in high school would imitate. Yep. The church lady and every single character you guys ever did in Wayne's World, whatever the characters were. And I always wondered after your incredible stint on SNL, like I missed you. I missed
what
seeing
happened
those.
To me?
No. I mean, I've seen you. I saw you pop up in a bunch of stuff. Yeah. But just as far as being a king of sketch comedy, it's almost like, and I know you had a couple other like spinoff kind of sketch comedy shows. But do you miss it at all still today? Because there's really one of the all-time greats.
Thank you.
Without a doubt.
I mean,
you got me to vote for Ross Perot. This is the first vote I ever cast. Remember that?
Ross Perot is a gift from heaven. That was my Sarah Palin for Tina Fey.
Yeah.
Lorne Michaels said, there's someone running, a Texas billionaire, he's running for president, we have some tape. Why don't you go down the hall and, you know, like, see if there's anything there, you know? I turn it on. The ears are sticking out. Can I finish? James Brown is already there. Can I finish one time? Or are you going to talk over me? Can I finish one time? Here's the deal. You can't put a porcupine in a barn, light it on fire, and expect to make licorice. What? That was a gift. George Bush was work.
Phil Hartman did Stockdale, right?
Oh, yeah. When he tried to ditch him in the woods, you know?
Oh, my God.
Stockdale was, I was driving as Ross, and I wanted to ditch him after his debate performance. Where are we going? Who am I? Phil could do anything. God rest his soul.
I remember Phil used to do in that same election cycle, 92, Phil was doing Clinton, and he would do the thing, and he comes into a McDonald's on a jog, and he starts making analogies and stealing people's food to make his analogy. Like, if I take a bite of this, and he just, and the whole thing was he just wanted to eat everybody's McDonald's.
Yes, Phil could do anything. I mean, I swear to God.
I mean, you guys, I echo what Sean says. You guys were up there for me, too. I looked at, you guys were at such heights that I thought, I could never get anywhere near that. You guys are so incredible at what you do. I still look up to what you guys do because you guys did it in this way. This is way before YouTube and you could have control over it and do all this kind of shit. Like, you guys were doing it live on SNL in a way and stuff that nobody else was doing. There's so much derivative shit that came out of that kind of era.
I mean, you guys have had all these weird things happen. Like, I had auditioned for the show twice. Just didn't get it. Al Franken saw me in San Francisco. I followed Kennison at the Comedy Store at midnight, Sam Kennison. Mm-hmm. I bombed. Mm-hmm. I was shocked I got on it. you know, Jim Carrey was auditioning. I'm going, okay, I'm not on this show. Got on it. Then I was told we only had an 8-show pickup for the first time in the history of Saturday Night Live. It wasn't a full 20.
Wow.
Hit the ground running or we're out of here.
Right.
And then the church lady was just a fluke. It's something I did in my stand-up. Oh, we'll try it. So the so week funny. I did the church lady, the first week I, and I'd never done sketch comedy. I'd only done stand-up.
Wow.
So incredible. Crazy.
So Neil Young calls.
Sure.
I do. Yeah. Of course he does. Yeah. And I got to go down
to. Oh, he leaves long messages, doesn't he, Dan?
Oh, man. Look at one of my first impressions. I was at a Neil Young concert once. I go, Dana Carvey concert. Backstage. Dana Carvey, come backstage, concert. And so I went back, and Neil was in his bus making pasta. Yeah, this is going to kick in a little while. Could you do a little bit of time? So I had this old bit, hacky bit I used to do of Neil Young doing a commercial for McDonald's. I'm not proud of it. Well, I dreamed I saw the golden arches in the yellow haze of the sun. I do the whole thing. 10 years later, my kids are in junior high, and a dad comes up to me and goes, hey, man, I got this Neil Young bootleg album. You're the first track.
No way.
Anyway, way, but anyway, wow. So church lady, I put it in the read-through. It did so-so. Neil Young had called the next day, so I had to go down to Madison Square Garden. He was doing a garage band motif. He told Lorne, I need some kind of angry woman. So I went down there and did it that night on Wednesday when they picked the show. I came back and found out that church lady just barely got on, that my buddy Phil Hartman said, I think we should give it a chance. So it was the last sketch in the first show, thinking this isn't going to fly.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I'd never done it with the dress. So the minute I said Victoria Jackson was going off and Jesus, this and that. And then I just said, well, isn't that special? Boom.
Boom.
Mic drop. Then all the nerves went away, you know, so and that, that's
and
how
that,
I got classic.
And that last slot on SNL, as you know, and you guys know because you've hosted.
The death spot.
That's where they kind of either bury stuff or try stuff that's kind of new.
Yeah, or they don't think it has a chance.
Right, yeah.
Kind of.
But that's, but it's.
You mean
it
the
must
last
be,
sketch of the.
The
yeah.
last sketch, last of, the sketch night, of the night. But it's kind of freeing, right, Dana? You must have felt kind of like, fuck it.
I was so nervous before I went out there because I literally played a pizza parlor in Martinez, California in July.
Right.
I played to 4 people. Half the audience hated me. These are the jokes. Then this is October 10th. I go out to Lorne's house. I hang out with Paul McCartney and Chevy Chase. Mm-hmm. I go to Yankees games with Lorne. I live there for like a month. I go on the show. I'm shy. I'm terrified. I was swearing at myself in the mirror before the show, you know, you yeah. motherfucker.
Yeah.
Just to get rid of the. So then church lady moves up first. I'm in the, I didn't know I was in the cold opening with, so I'm in that. I'm doing a alien wow. sketch, and then I do Chopping Broccoli at the end.
Oh, I mean, God. One of my all time favorites, Chopping Broccoli.
Why that? Stuck so hard, I don't know, Sean.
It's me so too. Funny. It's
I don't
so
know
bizarre.
That one. How do I not know that one?
It's chopping broccoli, broccoli.
I didn't
he's like
do
a British
it that
guy
much.
Chopping broccoli. It's the song's called Chopping Broccoli, and he sits at the piano, and it's just chords like a ballad, like a rock ballad, it's like and a, it's chopping broccoli.
I used to do George Bush doing Chopping Broccoli too.
What can I hear that?
You know, Chopping Broccoli. That you know, it's so bad.
But the premise of it. Jason was that yeah. he had, which Lorne liked, a guy who had to play his new songs for the record company executives. It was yeah. Sigourney Weaver and Phil Hartman. And it was so like, fun. Well, I don't know if I've got anything. I'll try it. And he says, he's cold as ice, which is like a foreigner thing.
Uh-huh.
And then he's riffing paradise. He's making it up. And then finally, and she's chopping broccoli. And that became just it's chopping broccoli. She chops. So that was just that.
Like what? Like Jay, whatever the idea was, it would uh-huh. always come back to he's just chopping broccoli.
He's
sure.
just chopping broccoli. Now I do 10-minute renditions when I do stand-up.
Oh, you do?
Quest, riff. Oh, yeah. I do it with a guitar. I do all.
I would love to see
but
that.
But that was the most nervous I'd ever been was
the
before that
the first
show.
The impression, because I don't when you audition for Saturday Night Live, don't you have to have a couple of impressions? And if mm-hmm. so, do you still do the ones that you did originally for your first audition?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, I probably did Jimmy Stewart. I think yeah. I did Chopping Broccoli a little bit.
Yeah.
See, well, what happened was I auditioned in different. I didn't want to audition at the Comedy Store or the Improv because mm-hmm. I always bombed in those yeah. two places. So Lorne Michaels comes around with the show. They need 4 new cast members. So I was playing a little club on the west side called Igby's, which is 100-seater, low ceiling, hot club. And I played there a lot. Rosie O'Donnell was headlining the week that Lorne Michaels was in town. I didn't know her, but I knew the owner. And I said, ask Rosie if she'll give me a spot on her set and I'm going to bring Lorne Michaels. So Rosie said yes. So then I there that night, Lorne Michaels is going to see me do stand-up.
Wow.
And I met Rosie, and she seemed like an old soul. She just was like kind of had that Rosie confidence,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I said, maybe I should go on first. So, you know, I call him first. So I'm standing in the wings. Lorne Michaels come to see me. I've been at this 10 years. I failed at everything I'd done had been canceled or bombed. And then... Lorne Michaels walks in. Holy shit. After him, Brandon Tartikoff, the head of NBC at the time. Then I'm like, oh, God, he brought the head of the network. Then Cher.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. They came in. Wow. And so, but I was nervous, but I had 40 minutes instead of 5. And I think that's what helped.
40?
Yeah, because Rosie cleared the decks. You know, I just did the night with her. And then she got a sitcom out of it.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
That's incredible. Wow. So just to jump back and forth a little bit, Dana. So you leave SNL, you go and you do a sitcom, as we mentioned. Or no, sorry, no. not sitcom. Comedy show.
I did the Dana Carvey show in 1996. With Steve Carell.
Yeah.
Stephen Colbert.
Yes.
Louis C.K.
Yeah.
Dino Stepanopoulos.
Robert Carlock.
Unbelievable.
John Glazer. Yeah.
My good friend
John Glazer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we had Louis C.K. was my head writer. I gave him
Louis C.K. was your head writer. Steve Carell was a writer, as we mentioned.
Performer. Yeah.
Performer. And
Carell.
Carell, I mean...
I call him the two Steves.
Smigel, of course, Smigel.
Smigel, yeah, was my co...
Was
my
your co-creator, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is an unbelievable all-star team.
Yeah.
And just, of course, because showbiz is bats 1,000, they cancel it.
There's a story behind that. First of all...
Well, let's hear it.
I had 2 weeks to think about it because I missed sketch comedy, and Smigel and I had a great connection on there. You know, we did Carson and a lot of different, the McLaughlin group things together. So,
oh, God, I love that.
Issue 1, Jason, the Argonauts, Sean Connery. No, that was just rhythmically riding a thing. Smigel, we just connected rhythmically. So, I decided I want to do it on HBO. I go, you could do 10, you could still have a life, you know. So then I think Bob Iger was in the room. I don't want to blame him. I like Bob, but they go, come on, do it at ABC. My manager wanted to do it at ABC. We could do it at ABC. It'd be great, you know, the great Brad Gray. So then, and then Louis and Robert at that point kind of wanted the budget and the money of ABC. And the idea was, oh, you have a Disney face. You're kind of like Carol Burnett. You can work in primetime. Okay, terrific. Let's do it. And then they gave me an extra $1 million. You know, okay, people like numbers.
That'll do it.
Sure. I never cared about the money that much, but like you guys. But my point is, the first show, we were banking shows in New York. We moved to New York because my wife and I didn't want to raise our kids in the Valley, which probably would have been fine.
Yeah.
So then we bank a sketch that Louis wrote, which was Bill Clinton. I didn't have a good Bill Clinton, but it's like, he's giving his speech to the nation, and we can do better and all that. And then he opens his shirt, and he's got teats like a dog, and he's going to breastfeed puppies. So actual live puppies, and I will feed the nation. So I got the chart of the we were at 16 million when Bill appeared, and it goes like a ball. We were like at 2 million just hanging in.
Viewers, you mean. Yeah.
Once you expose a row of teats.
Yeah, the teats. And then we were just the critics lambasted us, and so we made it through 8 shows, and then it became a cult classic.
So had you been on something that wasn't a mass audience broadcast platform, perhaps it would have been a little bit more embraced? Did you find that you were more of a populist audience than...
Yeah,
than
there was no Netflix, there was no anything. Yeah. There was just maybe, I guess, Comedy Central or HBO. You know?
Yeah, I remember that coming out. I remember the Dana Carvey show, and I was like, in my head, I was like, oh, finally somebody gave the guy a shot. Like, it just seemed like natural that you would
it
have
that
shot.
It hasn't worked. You know, Martin Short tried. I mean, people have tried in prime
time. It's tough, isn't it? Yeah.
It's got to be the right platform.
Didn't Marty do it with...
Well, he did one recently with Maya.
Yeah, he did one with Maya, yeah.
So, but there was some brilliant stuff in that, some great stuff. You met with the A team of writers we had. And so Josh Greenbaum did a documentary that came out a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I got to say, I heard about that.
Really? Yeah, Too Funny to Fail.
Yeah.
Isn't there so much content? I'm just going to go on a limb and say it. There's just, we've reached peak content.
I always think people talk about content creators. This is a kind of, I don't know if I brought it up. It kind of makes me mad because I feel like content is what I put between the walls of my house to insulate, you know, from the cold or the heat. That's content.
Right.
If you call what you do content, just you're just making filler.
Yeah.
Like, okay, thanks. I don't make content.
Something to stuff the pipe with.
Right. Well, we've
But I'm
also
not making art. It should be noted.
No, yeah.
It's well, also we're not the audience either. Is the entertainer now. It was like you'd have Frank Sinatra on stage or whatever, and the audience would be out there. Now the audience is entertainers as well with social media and Instagram.
Yeah, everybody's
We're all
famous.
Posting. We're all entertaining now. Warhol said we'd all be famous for 15 minutes.
Right. Yeah.
Now it's like, we'll all be stars.
Well, speaking of which, I mean, your longevity and relevance has been so sustained for so long. You can't attribute all that to luck and talent, right? I mean, is there a third magic component that you're working with? Because, you know, I'm with Sean. I prefer a weekly dose of you, but you are around and fantastic still. And I mean, what's your secret?
I don't know. I'm a little bit like you, Jason. I think from what I've heard is I really kind of am a homebody a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I've got my keyboards and my guitar, my lovely wife, and all the cool shows I could watch.
Right.
So, you know, I just do the... I mean, what do you guys say to yourself? It's cognitive behavioral therapy, right? No one's thinking of you. Never feel sorry for yourself. When I had those few things bomb and the botch bypass, that's a whole other story in the 90s.
Yeah, in your heart, yeah.
That thing. So then I had to come out on Letterman, and I was feeling really small. Like,
you
really...
You had, like, an operation on the wrong... I remember you talking about this, on the wrong artery or something, right?
Well, yeah, as quick as I can. Yeah, I had familial hypercholesterolemia. I didn't know it. My cholesterol was 400. My LDL was 300.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
And I didn't know it. So at 42, I started having symptoms. They found out I had a blocked LAD, but I never had a heart attack. Big distinction, because I was so fit at the time. Yeah. And so then I had someone... throw in some stents, and I didn't know that sometimes your body doesn't know how to react to a little metal sheath in the artery, surprise. Yeah, sure. So it'll scar tissue up, therefore blocking you again. So I had like six of those. They had to keep rotor-rootering and putting new stents in. It was all in this one area of the LAD. Usually people get squeamish and leave the room at this point.
No.
I'm used to the first diagonal.
This is a crossover episode of Hypochondriactor, right? This
yeah.
is,
yeah. Welcome. Well,
I love medical stuff.
We'll do a public service after this where I say this thing is arrested now, in essence, if you follow the protocol. Heart disease, you should never be surprised when you're having a heart attack.
Right.
There's so many things they do now. But anyway, so then they said, well, we'll do a simple bypass. You keep restenosing. These were these old-fashioned stents. So they swung over my mammary arteries, which never block up.
Right.
But the surgeon I picked in Northern California was considered the greatest in the world. I had a private jet in the air to take me to Cedars-Sinai, but I was convinced by well-meaning people to go with this surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
He ended up, instead of attaching a hose to a big trunk of a tree, he attached it to a healthy diagonal off the other side. So the blockage was still there. So when they found it, I was like, holy shit, because by that point I'd had so many angioplasties, I was kind of awake. So they rotor-rooted it, and he goes, you want me to push it a little harder? And I go, yeah, let's go for it. So now it's never blocked up again. And no one knows why except my Hindu cardiologist, P.K. Shaw, director of cardiology at Cedars-Sinai, said a prayer for me at Mother Teresa's tomb. And my 91-year-old mother-in-law, she's probably 60 then, said a prayer for me at a wishing well outside of Dublin. I'm just putting it out there.
Sure.
And so that happened. And then I went on the protocol. My cholesterol now, my LDL, which is the real dangerous one, is 45. And it was 300.
Amazing.
So here I am. I feel perfect.
No changes to your diet at all, or a complete
shift on the diet. Yeah. I know you guys tease Sean about his diet. I was like that in my 30s. You know, I'd have a big, giant turkey sandwich with mayonnaise or macaroni and cheese. I was eating kind of like a kid from the 60s or 70s. So anyway, I did change the diet, and I just paid more attention to everything and stress.
Are you vegan now or anything like that?
No. Mediterranean diet has the best results. So I do a lot of Sims.
What part of the Mediterranean?
Mediterranean
diet. I love the Mediterranean. Are you talking about the Greek islands? Maybe?
A little salmon, you know.
Now, so anyway. Croatia is the place to go. Sorry.
Do you have to watch your heart rate? Like, can you exercise vigorously and all that stuff?
Yeah, because I never had any heart damage or a heart attack, which is usually people kind of glaze over at this point as well. I really, really have a high V2O max for my age. I mean, I hike up mountains and I don't have any governor on that.
Oh, so you're like bionic now. How great.
Would love to go for a hike for you guys, because you go, damn, you weren't lying.
You know what I saw yesterday? Kevin Nealon's got a hiking show. He does a little chat.
I was on that.
For a while.
Yeah.
Pay attention.
Yeah. I was on that show with them, and I just kept accelerating just a little bit on the hill, just more and more, until it's like, so let me understand this. Yeah, Kevin was another one of my partners in crime on SNL.
Hans and Franz. You guys were hilarious.
I love that maybe more than anything else, as far as what makes me laugh. Two wounded idiots who are paranoid and delusional and keep challenging an invisible audience.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you think we're not properly pumped, I could take your flab and stretch it into the shape of a rope ladder so you could crawl down back in the sewer, because that's where Lewis live. It's just that because
so
I became very fey with that character and Langorious, which made it more fun for me.
It's really funny.
It's so great.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/smartlist to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/smartlist. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you, like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen to Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.
Back in the 90s, Pepsi and Coca-Cola were in a heated race to try and win loyal customers by any means necessary. But when Pepsi launched an ambitious promotion that encouraged people to buy Pepsi and redeem points for prizes, they overlooked their own fine print in a major way. I'm Misha Brown, and I'm the host of Wondery's podcast, The Big Flop. Every week, guests join me to chronicle one of the biggest pop culture fails of all time. Like, who at Pepsi thought it would be a good idea to advertise that people could earn enough points to redeem a military jet as a prize? They never imagined somebody might actually try to snag it. But a 23-year-old did, and suddenly, Pepsi owed him a jet. Follow the Big Flop on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to the Big Flop early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Hello, I'm Johnny Knoxville.
And I'm Elna Baker, and we have a new podcast. It's called Pretty Sure I Can Fly.
Yep, we've teamed up with my friends and barmates from Smartless to create a podcast where we talk to folks who have more balls in a bowling alley.
People who accomplish something extraordinary despite people telling them that it couldn't or shouldn't be done.
You'll hear stories about the Air Force doctor who buckled into a 600-mile-per-hour rocket sled and became the fastest man on the planet.
And a man who wrestles alligators and sharks for fun.
Do not do this.
You'll hear about a foul-mouthed moonshiner.
Got a 2-inch dick and a 6-inch tongue and knows how to use both of them.
And an even more foul-mouthed female stunt pilot. We got bull riders.
Balloonists.
Bobsledders.
And big wave surfers. People who lay their balls on an anvil and hand the other fella the hammer.
Okay. I bet you've actually done that, Johnny.
Maybe for sweeps. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
All right, back to the show.
Now, you know, I want to ask about you being a dad because I'm always blown. Like, I have a bunch of... Your friends are your friends because they make you laugh, right? Jason and Will make me laugh so hard. Another friend of mine, Carrie, makes me laugh.
Oh, you guys have a great thing going on.
Oh, thanks. But, you know, and I'm always kind of amazed, like, being around Jason in front of his kids or Will in front of his kids, sometimes their kids will laugh at something they say, and most of the time they'll kind of like roll their eyes. And from the outside, I'm like, no, wait, your dad is fucking hysterical. Like, I can't imagine being one of your kids. Like, I'm always blown away when kids don't find their famous, funny parents
funny.
They're
just so tired of the material.
Aren't you guys, you're most of the time just regular, right? Most of the time.
Yeah.
And then if you get around someone who makes you laugh, like me, David Spade, it's hysterical, ping-pong effect starts to happen.
Right.
But, you know, I'm mostly just regular, and they try to make me laugh, you know.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
I love watching my kids' sense of humor develop.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, it's really interesting to see a human being discover sarcasm and irony, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just obviously it's after they learn the language, and then they learn, like, how to, like, twist and bend stuff and not break it. And, like, I mean, it's just, like...
Maple's got it down. His daughter, Maple.
Yeah.
I'm in love with both of his daughters. But Maple said to me the other day when we were out together, all of us, we were saying goodbye, and she didn't even get up off the couch to say goodbye. She turns to me, and she goes, I love you, sweetheart. You have a great evening. I mean, and she's like, you know.
11.
And it was so sarcastic because we were all saying, I love you, goodbye.
They make such leaps all of a sudden, and I hope you guys wrote them down. I wish I had. But one night I was putting my son to bed, and he's like 4. And I said, Tom, do you know that I love you? And he goes, it's pretty obvious. He's 4.
How did you start doing the podcast with Spade? I love the combo of you and Spade.
Yeah.
Because you're both fucking naturally hilarious dudes.
Seeing him up close, and it's so lo-fi, but he'll create a little mini movie in like 30 seconds. So it's like, hey, I saw that as a boozy Susie, whoop, and he's like, I'm like, and I don't know what I was doing. It's just so fun to watch and riff around with him. And I met him before SNL, just at this house in Beechwood Canyon. So I met him when he was like 21. What's up, dude? Hey, buddy. And everyone always immediately likes David. Mm-hmm. And I did. And then I interacted with, he came to SNL. We were there as bandmates for 3-4 years. And then, you know, I was up north raising my kids. But every time we see each other, it's like, you guys, meet 1 second. So when I moved back down here, and I live at a place that's walkable to Koi, I started having dinner with David a lot. And that's where we would go. And one time we went to some other restaurant. I said, let's just go over there. Because I like to have a conversation. I don't like to. It's like when I met you, Jason.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, Jason Bateman, this is cool. Uh-huh. And then we were at the Laker game, and we're up in the Ted Sarandos box, and it's literally, okay, what? Well, how are you? Yeah, I'm fine. What are you doing? You know, so coy is like, you can talk.
Yeah.
But David and I did that. I did a little off the radar podcast, just to try it out, called Fantastic. It's online, where I had a female sidekick, and I had relatives on it, like my sister and stuff, mm-hmm. and then I would riff and do long form. Like Obama was a running part of the podcast. Mm-hmm. Dana, can I come on today? No, my sister's coming on. Michelle, I'm not coming on. Says the sister's coming on. No, leave the egg salad out. So I could just riff stuff like that, long form. And then I had David on as a guest. Our manager heard it, our mutual manager, Mark Gervitz, and said, you guys got to do a podcast. You got to do a podcast. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So then we decided to try it. Ah, we'll try it. And I'm still not used to this idea. I mean, it was kind of fun, and I consciously, because I listened to your podcast, and I was listening to, I thought it'd be fun to try to do voices and entertain you guys a little bit today.
You have.
But
in spades.
This idea of me is like, either I kill or I'm fired, you know, or I'm dismissed for most of my career. Like, I've got to destroy it, stand up, and I've got to kill. It's a lot of pressure. And now being authentic and real, funny if it comes up, and just be yourself. Like, I take the headphone, I go, so that was good? It's like, yeah, okay. Yeah. It's this brand new art form. I mean, everyone would have had these. All those sketch actors that, you know, Shecky Green would have had a podcast, or Sid Caesar. So it's an incredible new art form.
Well, but you've just got such a way about you where, I mean, you're so easy to be with and enjoy being around, whether it's in person or watching you on TV or just hearing your voice. I mean, don't discount that. I know it doesn't feel like you're doing anything, but you're so naturally appealing.
Well,
this goes back to like what Jason was saying, what's the missing ingredient? I really think is you're so naturally funny, you have no choice in the matter. There are certain people who have no choice. Yeah. You and Farrell and Spade and whomever, the list is long, but who you have no choice in it, and that's the reason that you have the longevity. I think, Jason, to answer your question, is just you're
a good dude,
but naturally funny, naturally talented, and I think the podcast reveals that to a wider audience of like, you know, you can just kind of do it, and you can do it in conversation, and it's not easy to do. It's a lot harder than people think, and there are a lot of people who are funny or present really good, but that's somebody else doing a lot of work for them, and then they present. To actually be that yourself,
It's been tough, very consistently. I'm sure it is for you three, this art of conversation, what Johnny Carson could do or anybody we admired interviewing in this sort of lo-fi form where it's a conversation as opposed to a straight interview.
Yeah, we're bad
interviewers. And wanting it to have energy, needing to overlap like you would at dinner. Spade and I tease you. I said I was practicing overlapping you during Christmas break. My wife would talk and then I would interrupt her just to stay in shape. But I listened to the podcast.
Would you have your wife ask really long questions so you could get it? Get ready for Jason.
Yeah. Because sometimes you don't know if you're giving your partner an assist, that they literally have started an opus, and then you can tell the steam is out of the... I'm not sure they know are going to land this.
Yeah.
So you can interrupt them or not.
I'd like to give you half the answer I'd like to hear from you. Then turn you loose.
All right. Wait, Dana, do you have... Are you other than this, the great podcast with you and
you got another podcast.
Yeah. Like an album, basically. It's called The Weird Place. I did it with my sons.
Really?
Oh, that's great.
They're very sensitive about the whole Nepo movement. Mm-hmm. So they're thinking of changing their last name, nepotism.
Yeah. It's so, I mean, it's a new concept. You know. I mean, what the fuck are we talking about?
Hey, I'm a plumber. Joey, my son's a plumber.
He plumbs too.
Capiche, rubber chicken. What do you got?
Yeah, it's what you do after your foot is in the door. Like, you know, I mean, if you can stay in there, that's like, then you got something. But
no one should
apologize for having the door ajar.
Now they're going to start saying, well, you know what? You're too funny for comedy. It's unfair. All the funny people are taking over comedy, and that's not fair.
You're not leaving any room for the unfunny people.
Yeah, you're not leaving room for the unfunny people to be in comedy.
The AI can write songs. It could write a screenplay. Can the AI be funny? We actually, for The Weird Place.
I asked that yesterday.
By the way, it can. Yeah. I was actually literally this morning just screwing around with chat
GPT.
GPT. Yeah. That's like incredible.
It's unbelievable.
That's the next crazy thing.
Yeah, yeah, it actually is. I said, write a thank you note for my friend's party last night. And they wrote it out and said, now make it a little bit funny and make it about movies. And it was making this jokes about, well, the food should probably only deserve a nomination, but certainly not a win. It was just like a second.
It's amazing.
Wow. Yeah. Make fun of a president. And George Bush Sr., what if it came out? Nah, gotta do it. Would get an appropriate laugh. Because he was kind of a robot, too.
Yeah, gotta do it. Dana, you need to sue AI.
Yeah, no, it sends you a royal check.
And you're going to ask, but in a weird twist, you're going to say, AI, write up a lawsuit against yourself.
Well, the weird place is like a very loose takeoff on the Twilight Zone, where it's anthology Twilight Zone. And we had one we didn't record where it was the J-1000, so it was a robot, an AI robot of Jay Leno. And he's like, yeah, okay, let's go out there. I'm doing a set. And his handler, his computer guy, goes, kill him tonight. So he ends up killing the audience. he stands trial. Yeah, you know, he said to kill him, so I did. You know, my compassion chip was a defunct. You know, I got to get changed out. You know? I didn't have any empathy, so I just took them all out. You know, so
that's a programming error.
It's a it was a whole futuristic thing, but that's where we're all going.
That is hysterical. You never answered the first. We'll end with this because you never answered the first question, which was why are you and Bennett, one of our producers' houses? Why are you sitting in his house?
I'll give these guys.
I think I know why. Can I just say the first part is we tried to have you on the show a while ago and we had a technical difficulty. Dana was the guest that we had who at the last minute we had to
bail. But you do a podcast.
I'd gotten a new laptop and I have a technical thing I do with Fly, or we call it the wall. Do you guys ever call it smart? Yeah, we got a smart coming up. But anyway, we went through the torturous thing and the patience of the guy during the whole pandemic. Okay, let's...
Do you see a red dot on the left?
It should be blinking. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Okay, what do you see? I see a blank screen. Let's refresh out of that. Do you see
go to settings. You see the wheel for settings?
It's been the biggest part of our lives. Uh-huh. And so they did that with me for 45 minutes, and I told them it was like a movie. It was like, ha, 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 we'll get him on. And then it was like, okay, it was like Apollo 13. Let's see what's going on here. We're going to get it. Don't worry. Press that. Do this. I did it around and around and around. The robot said, no, can't do it. And then there was despair and sadness and nervousness toward the end.
Yeah.
That's why I said, I'll come over. I live near here. I said, I'll just come to his house.
No way.
I mean, you came over to Bennett's house to do this. You are such a love.
It was very close by. I could have practically walked.
How about that?
But you didn't. We'll be right back.
Anyway, so I should say... You guys have been so nice to me. That's what Paul said. Thanks for all the compliments, which I think he said to you guys. Because you can't help but gush a little bit with Paul McCartney.
Well, that's how we feel about you, man. Honestly, Dana, you have been such a hilarious dude for so long. I've been such a massive fan and admirer.
Yeah, I never knew this. I would have felt so good all these years.
I feel like I've bitten off your shit so many times. I feel like I've made people laugh because of you.
Yeah.
And I just, honestly, it's such an honor to...
You guys you're a universe. The smartless guys has become a meme. Mm-hmm. What did the smartless guys do? Where are the smartless guys going?
Yeah, with you and Spade. By the way, I texted Spade the other day about something, and he didn't text me back. He just sent me a voice note back. I'm like, motherfucker, take the time to write it out.
That's all he does is the walkie-talkie thing. Yeah. Hey, buddy. Yeah. I was like,
because you can't type that, you know.
No, Spade's the great. I'm having fun doing it, but this has been a blast. I know it's hard. I know what it is to wrap it up and like, do we go longer? I know where you guys are at right now.
No.
So I'll be the guest.
We have to go long with people that aren't any good. You've given up. Well, this might be a two-parter. What are we going to do?
Yeah, I'll finish with Dennis Miller. Christ sakes. Okay. What are these cats? What are they doing? Talking into a microphone. It's called Smartless. Okay. That's an apt title from what I've heard over here. All right. You got the guy in the middle with the fluffy hair so thick it looks like a hairpiece. The perennial 10-year-old on the right side of my screen. Baseball caps for everybody, okay? Anybody wear a suit. Dennis's.
Dana, just before we let you go, did you not used to do Dennis to him on Update?
Oh, is yeah.
That, yeah, that's yeah. my record. Like, you used to go on and
I'd
do him to him.
I'd go up and have the wig and do it with I love so his fun. Rhythm. I can't.
It's the best.
Give me a topic, and I'll do Dennis talking about it. Any topic.
Podcasts, and there's too many of them.
Yeah.
Podcast. Okay, what are we up to? 109 million now? Okay. Every kid in the basement with a microphone and a cheap laptop can just start yapping out there, looking at those counts. What's he got? 29 people listening to this pablum? All right. Okay. What happened to Edward R. Murrow? One guy with talent with a mic. Now you got 6 million people without a clue. Okay. Haven't seen this much dysfunction since the dysfunctional convention in Utah, all right? It doesn't even have to make sense.
It's so good. It's so good.
You're great,
That's
lads.
Crazy that you can do that.
God, thank you so much for coming on and entertaining us. You're such a consistently hilarious, awesome
All right.
Guy.
Well, okay, Dennis. I'll say this. This is because it'll never happen. We'll all have dinner at Koi with Spade, and we'll blow people's minds.
Let's do it. Let's
I'm
do
there
it.
As much as Spade.
I'll just leave you with this. I use George Bush Sr. for anxiety. I make lists with him, and this is not a joke.
Yeah.
Coming over here, went to the producer's house. Producer, Bennett, Will, Sean over there, Jason, talent, full modicum, every area, game shows, movies, television, sitcoms, American treasures. Coming at you, talking over, not a subject, long rambles, number one.
Oh, so good.
That is unbelievable.
Calms me down. Calm now.
All right. So. I love you, Dana Carvey.
Thank you, Dana.
I love you, Dana Carvey.
Bye,
Dana.
Bye.
Well, that could be all time.
All time.
Could be all time.
Yeah.
What a hilarious dude. I mean,
yeah.
And just like this, like this, like this. Like, what's the subject? Give me a thing. Give me a suggestion. Like, in a constant, you know, unbelievable talent. And like, and again, you can't fake that. He's back. He keeps leaving the room and coming back.
He's leaving the room.
You can't. It's what we were talking about. You can't fake it, right?
It's like genuine, and it's just pure energy. I don't think I wasn't that energetic when I was 12.
I was going to ask him that. He's got like these sketch comedy people like Marty Short or him or whoever it is. They have so much energy all the time.
Yeah, they have great engines. Like they just all, they can run.
But you know what I thought was interesting about him was I was going to ask about this, is that when he did all those roles as a kid, you know, as when he was younger and he was an actor first and then he was in sketch comedy. And I bet you that's why he was such a star in sketch comedy.
He'd never done sketch comedy before.
Yeah, I know, but he was an actor.
He's one of the all-time great sketch comics.
Yeah, incredible. I love him.
I love that idea, like, you want to bring up all this stuff. And he was talking about, like, with McCartney, like, can I bring up the Beatles and can I bring up the songs?
I know. I wanted
and with
bring
a guy
up
like
Church
him,
Lady.
You're like, I want to bring up Church Lady and I want to talk about all the great things. It'd be like talking to Sean and not bringing up Candy Crush, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The things you're good at.
Right, exactly.
That you're known for.
Yeah.
You're going to bring up Skittles and Candy Crush.
I have to believe that a show like the Dana Carvey Show would work today because there are stations that would, you know, you throw it on HBO today or Netflix today and, you know, why not?
Or on broadcast. You'd think that broadcast would want something like
that. No, but they have, as you said, they've tried that variety show thing. Maya had her own, right?
With Marty. With
Marty, yeah.
At NBC.
Right. It's just, I don't know why they don't take, why SNL is the only one that has sustained is a tribute to Lorne, certainly. But I could do with a couple of more.
I can't believe he has all this energy at his age after having gone through, which you don't know about, Jason. You didn't remember that he had what kind of surgery on his heart?
It's a bypass.
What kind of surgery was that?
It was a
bypass.
Wow, Sean, really good.
That was good. That was good.
Smart. Smart.
Smartless is 100% organic and artisanally handcrafted by Bennett Barbaco, Michael Grant Terry, and Rob Armjarf.
Smartless.
If you like Smartless, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Get to the chopper. I'll be back. Listen, I gotta tell ya, of all guests we've had on Smartless, I don't know if we've had a bigger icon on our podcast than Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, what a treat it was talking to that guy. Arnold is an inspiration, from having reached the heights of bodybuilding to then conquer Hollywood and become a global movie star. Oh, and for his third act, he oversaw the world's fifth largest economy as governor of California. The man has truly done it all. In our interview, he shares the secret of how he's able to accomplish what he puts his mind to, what motivates him to keep working out all these years, and the extreme generosity that he received after arriving in America. You gotta listen to this episode to hear what it's like to be Chris Pratt's father-in-law and how Arnold's first comedy, Twins, has made him more money than any other film he's done. Hint, he's also a great businessman. Give it a listen if you haven't. Bye, Seps.